For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. Our buddy George joins us. The first episode of 2023, I don't even know what year it is anymore, is here. We're going to talk some IMSA this time. Tomorrow will be a joint IndyCar F1 episode as we kind of let the news build up a little bit. So, gentlemen, how is everybody's holiday? We'll start with Frenchie, and then we'll go to George. How is everybody's holiday?
It was good. I was kind of...
Holidays.
Yeah, I was... Let's see. I don't know how to describe it. Like, holed up in the Pocono Mountains in northeastern Pennsylvania at this resort where there were a lot of activities to do. So, just want the listeners to know that I... Not single-handedly, but I contributed a lot to us winning the gold medal at Name That Tune. And then what else did I help with? Michelle and I were a team, and we got second place in shuffleboard for the whole thing. So it was pretty good.
Oh. Okay. George?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me back on the show. Good to be with you guys. Hope to see everybody trackside sometime this year. Overall, pretty good. No major dramas, which is always a good thing. Especially when visiting both my folks and the Better Half's folks. So saw them, saw some good football, and mostly avoided work. So, yeah, no complaints.
Yeah, I spent the holidays sick, and that is partially why we took last week off, because I was pretty much unable to talk. So, you know, that was super fun, but... Let's dive into it. So we're just going to talk kind of this week about some of the changes coming to IMSA, some really cool changes. We'll talk a little bit about the roar before the Rolex, maybe a little Rolex talk. And there's a ton of IndyCar drivers who are racing this year, some maybe F1 or F2 guys, and, you know, plenty of Road to Indy guys as well that we'll talk about here and there. But Frenchie or George, I'll throw kind of like a simple question out there first. There's all these new GTP cars this year, which is the DPI replacement. Which, based on looks, you know, this isn't like what you think is going to be the best. What car to you looks the best?
All you, Frenchie.
I'm trying to remember all the ones that I've seen now. I feel like the... I don't know. I like the Acura a lot. I think it looks really good.
Okay.
What is it, the ARX06 or something that they're calling it, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not up on the names. On the car names, I should say. But okay, George, your pick.
You know, I got to stick with the Porsche 963. It's just a cool looking car. I think part of it is probably it's been probably because it's been out the longest publicly of yes. All the GTP / LMDH entries. Partially I'm more familiar with it than the others, and I think it's enough of a radical departure from, you know, the DPIs, and we haven't had a top class Porsche in quite a while. At least in IMSA. I know they had the LMP1 hybrids in WEC, which were really fun to watch, but you know, it's been a hot minute.
Yeah, fair. Okay. First off, I found something really interesting on Porsche. It was 2 days ago at this point. where, so you know, they have both the IMSA car and the WEC car, and anytime there's a new car, a new Porsche coming to IMSA with a customer program, they also want a new customer car in WEC at the same time, which is kind of interesting and maybe why Porsche is slowly rolling out the customer cars. But anyway, my pick is BMW. I love the look of the BMW, and I don't know. I've heard some tough things on their testing so far, but we'll see in a couple weeks. So, George, let's talk about the GTP changes since we are here. Why did they make the change? And we'll just start with that. Why the change now?
Yeah, gotcha. So I always like to say I could be wrong, and often am. So this is at least my understanding of what
I'm
I
always wrong.
remember, and can hardly remember what I have for breakfast half the time. So essentially, it was the idea behind what is the current or soon to be current GTP class is it's essentially DPI 2.0, throw in spec hybrids. But it's more or less the same idea behind the DPIs, where you base them off a LMP2 chassis, then you leave it up to the manufacturer for the bodywork, styling, and motor. The only
Okay.
difference between this and beyond the hybrid, anyways, and the old school, yeah, turn about the clock like 3 months and they're still running. So last season and the last formula of DPI. Is these are also eligible to run in WEC. They're everything in IMSA is a GTP if it's the top class. Everything is a hypercar in WEC if it's the top class. You can run either the LMDH, which is essentially the DPI 2.0, or LMH, I think is what they're calling it, for the hypercars. So, for example, Ferrari has a factory program for WEC this season. I'm pretty sure, unless I'm just losing my mind, I'm pretty sure those are technically LMDH cars with a spec hybrid and aren't entirely bespoke. Again, could be wrong on that, but I think I'm remembering that correctly. But long story short, it's a good merging of the rules and regulations where, if you want to go run Le Mans with your, let's say, Konica Minolta number 10 Wayne Taylor Racing with Andretti Autosport, Acura ARX 06, you can, as long as you get an entry. They're the old DPIs you couldn't run at Le Mans in the top class. These can, and vice versa with the hypercars and WEC.
So, will we see any WEC cars at the Rolex? Because I think I saw the entry list, and I don't think it is, but just what do you think? Do you think it's possible at this point or no?
No. Entry list is set for this year anyways. Yeah, I think you're going to see more of it next year. And I'm going to correct myself. The Ferrari is a bespoke hypercar, not a
Okay.
LMDH. That being said, next year, speaking of next year, we're going to see factory, semi-factory, because it's factory, but team is running and it's not full factory. And it's kind of confusing with the Lamborghini effort next year. That is a LMDH car. So yeah, apologies there on the incorrect fact on the Ferrari. But yeah, I think you're going to see more of them next year with the, I'm just going to call them GTP for the IMSA, DPI 2.0 cars for just the brevity's sake. Brand new, not tested in the heat of battle. Porsche, for example, is going to be running two cars in IMSA, two cars in WEC with, I think it's Porsche Penske Motorsport is the technical term of the team. Then they're going to have two customer cars in each series apiece, but those customer cars aren't ready yet. And it's the same way for some of the other makes and manufacturers where the parts aren't necessarily produced, the supply chains aren't, caught up, and the factory teams get first priority. So, I believe we're going to see two additional Cadillacs at Le Mans, the Action Express Racing and the second Chip Ganassi Cadillac LMDH. But I think that's really going to be the only crossover we see this year in the top class.
The one of the Ganassis is, at least on the IMSA side, is just the Rolex, right?
Yeah, so they're running one apiece in each championship full time. So I guess technically they're running their WEC entry for the Rolex, so that would be the only one, I suppose. But you will not see the two privateer Porsches for the Rolex either.
Right, that's it. They don't get those cars until like April or May.
Yeah, something like that. I think the latest I saw is,
Okay,
quote,
yeah.
sometime after Sebring.
Okay, yeah, well, that's close enough. All right, French, you got anything?
Yeah, do we know the exact driver pairings of the Rahal Letterman Lanigan BMWs yet? Or is it just kind of like from their stable of drivers that we're assuming will be paired up some way?
I have the list. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I don't think they're assigned to specific entries yet. They know the full season crew for the season, so they got two pairs at least, but they haven't announced who's going to be in for the Enduros or Rolex from the additional driver list.
Who, so obviously, like, we know who Conor DeFilippi is for BMW. The other guy, Nick, I'm gonna butcher the last name, so George, you probably know who I'm talking about. Nick
Yellowly.
Yellolly. Yeah, that one. Yep. We're just gonna keep going on, and Frenchie, go ahead and ask another question.
I was gonna say, what do you? I mean, I actually just recently listened to this new batch of Dinner with Racers came out over the holiday season, so I listened to Oliver Jarvis's episode just the other day, so it's kind of fresh in my mind. What is your opinion on them replacing Meyer Shank replacing him with Colin Brown? It's kind of interesting to see Colin Brown back in a top line car.
I both love it and hate it. I love it for Colin. Like that kid is just wicked talented. And I hate it for the individual he is replacing. People have talked on it a little bit as to the thoughts, why that change happened. Not very much has been said publicly about that, so I don't know how much we can really get into that's, truth versus just assumptions or reading between the lines. But there were a lot of races last season where, and I love Ollie Jarvis, and I think he's one heck of a driver, so this is no knock necessarily on him. But there were a number of races last year where the number 60 was running at the sharp end when he got in the car, and be it strategy, just getting outrun by the folks around him or bad luck, he just kind of seemed to, fall off from where he stepped into the car, if that makes any sense. Again, I don't know how much of that was him necessarily, and how much of that is just, people reading in between the lines and coming up with things, or how much of that is the actuality of the situation. But they took him out of the car. They kept Tom Blomqvist, who was just a frankly a revelation last season. Hadn't had a ton of sports car experience, if I can recall, at least not in the United States. He'd
Just with
done some
Rahal one
European
season.
racing, but
Yeah.
what's that? Sorry.
With Rahal and GT's one season back several years ago was the last time I think he was over
Yeah,
here.
yeah. That is correct, if I recall correctly, which I often don't, as evidenced by the Ferrari slip-up. But he had not run, to my knowledge, DPIs at any point. Again, could be wrong on that, but definitely had not run the Acura at any point. So him stepping in that car and being quick like a bunny immediately was, kind of a revelation, where you could call it a youth movement or something like that. But yeah, love it for Colin, hate it for Ollie, but it is what it is.
Frenchie, I'll let you keep going.
I found a name that I want you to pronounce, host.
Oh
Some of them down
no.
the
Yeah,
list.
go ahead.
Go to the Wright Motorsports Porsche if you can. The number
What
77 car.
category? What
Huh?
category of what series?
It's in GTD.
Okay, GTD. Which number again? I'm sorry.
77, the Wright Motorsport car.
Oh
This will
no.
be worth it for the listeners, trust
Oh
me. The,
no.
you see the first name I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, Alan.
Yeah,
Yeah, his
Alan.
name's Alan. That's his only name, just Alan.
Come on.
That's actually also going to be the episode title tomorrow, talking about IMSA and Alan. Actually, I need to make a note of this so I don't forget it, because I always say these things in episodes, like, oh, I'm gonna make, this guy's name, whatever. Okay, IMSA talk and Alan. Okay, Alan Brynjolfsson,
Actually seems like you did pretty well. I'm
or
surprised.
Brynjolfsson, depending on if that's a hard J or not, because I don't know where he is from. Okay, continue on. I'm gonna look up some more about Alan.
Okay. Yeah, become an expert.
Wait, he's old.
Oh, okay. How old are we talking?
Sorry. That's so mean. He's
You just got excited because everyone makes fun of
in
you
his
about that.
fifth. Yeah, I know. He's in his 50s.
Oh, that's not that old. You just offended some of our listeners.
Yeah, well, wouldn't be the first time.
So, George, let's talk LMP3. My
Yeah, sure
favorite.
thing.
Yeah. Host and I have very specific feelings about the entire category of LMP3 cars. What do you think about the changes that they have for this season in terms of the LMP3 schedule?
It's interesting. I'll put it that way. I don't necessarily have the highest of opinions of the class. I will say that they have crashed less than I thought they would, so
Fair.
I guess I do have to hand it to them over the past couple seasons. Frankly, they were kind of field fillers as IMSA figured out what to do with the top category. And there was a season where I think we only had two full-time P2 entries. They had three for Sebring that year, and I remember we had a sign at our campsite, sign up for LMP2 and get a free podium, just run one lap, something like that. So yeah, they came in kind of as field fillers. They're good entry level vehicles, machines, for folks getting into the enduro side. And how the rules are set up is they very much benefit young drivers, to the point where the past couple of seasons it's been mildly hilarious, where guys that are Indy Lights or NXT or pretty decent, well-known drivers that not necessarily an IndyCar yet, but getting there, well on their way, have been able to get into a P2 or P3 rather, because they're under 30 years old. So it's been a weird mix of old veterans that have aged out of their previous high-level driver rating or ranking. Pay for play older guys that your stereotypical dentist, though these days that dentists can't afford running race cars anymore. Days of Jack Miller kind of behind us, but so it's been refreshing from the youth movement side of things. I don't think they necessarily added that much other than just entries in the field and another class battle to happen. But this year they're getting rid of so. You have them included in IMSA at certain rounds, and they've had a separate championship that is just P3s for the past couple of seasons. I think they just called it Prototype Challenge. It's kind of an undercard series. Well, this year they're mixing it up and doing sprint races with P3s and GT4s. The GT4s compete in Michelin Pilot Challenge as well, but yeah, for they're shaking it up this year and. Can't pass judgment on it until I see it in person. But it'll be interesting. Just kind of put a pin on it though. The hot goss rumors on the street are P3 will be going away from the top series next year. Probably going to have quite a few more GTP entries. WEC is getting rid of P2, so some of those teams might come over and run P2 full time. And WEC is also going to a GT3 based formula. So, probably going to see a heck of a lot of crossover there and a lot more callers in terms of doing full season and enduros. And that's going to squeeze P3 out. It's, if you have a full field, you don't need field fillers.
So what I'm hearing is that LMP3 will not be spinning multiple times at 4 o'clock in the morning during the Rolex 24 this year.
Well, Mike, how else are you going to get your laps back when your GTP hasn't been race tested yet and breaks down in the middle of
You know, those cautions last year were the
night?
perfect time for me to nap. So I did appreciate them from that standpoint. I don't think I'm going to try to stay up. I don't know. Frenchie, are you going to try to stay up for 24 hours?
No, I know that's like not possible for me. I need probably at least 2 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
But I have something interesting I just
I think.
discovered that is probably.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Stay ahead of the pack with the latest racing news and interviews from the Hammerdown Racing Report, your source for regional racing action as well as the national scene. Every week, we recap racing action from all around Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan and cover national racing series from the World of Outlaws to NASCAR. Plus, get all the latest racing news. Join hosts Scott Hammer and Ron Miller, along with different featured guests each week. From dirt to asphalt, we have you covered. The Hammerdown Racing Report, available weekly on your favorite podcasting platform.
Common knowledge, but that I'm learning for the first time now, and that is that the V8, the 5.6 liter V8 that is in the back of all those LMP3 cars, is basically the same engine that would be in your, I don't know, mid 2010s Nissan Pathfinder, Nissan Titan, Armada truck. Pretty interesting to me that they're just using like a, you know, basically a truck motor V8 that I think that's the only capacity that Nissan used it in, because they definitely don't use it in any of their vehicles anymore.
I definitely don't use it in an Altima.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
Excuse me. Okay, so we've talked about LMP3. Is there any GTD and GTD Pro changes that we need to talk about?
I'd say yes. You do have two new cars this year. You have a new Ferrari and a new Porsche. You know, kind of squint at the Porsche to see what's different because it's a 911. But the new Ferrari looks, you know, very different from the last generation of GTD or GT3 Ferrari. Huge entry list this year. I think for the Rolex, you're looking at only 8 for GTD Pro, but 24 for GTD. So between the two, it's over half the field. A lot of those entries are enduro only. Quite a few are TBD in terms of their plans for the season, but a healthy dose of full season commitments as well. And a lot of either new teams stepping up from the lower divisions, as it were, and some crossover from some European teams as well, like Iron Dames is running a GTD car. Iron Lynx, who will, I think, running the Lambo prototype program next year. That's where Rogro will be for the Enduros. So you're seeing a lot of new teams. You're seeing expansion from a few teams as well. So it's a healthy time to be running GT3 machinery, especially with the WEC change on the horizon. So in theory, you do well in your GT3 equipment, which is what all GTD Pro and GTD is, or are rather. And you get an automatic invitation to Le Mans next year. Well, you don't have to buy a new car or loan a car from somebody else like you do now. So if you're willing to pay the shipping freight, you can, you know, bring what you run.
So am I right in seeing, this is another one of hosts and I's favorite topic to talk about, or host and me's, I don't, whatever the correct grammar is there. Is Cooper McNeil and WeatherTech Racing, they're only running in GTD Pro this year? They're not looking to like kind of stack and just place him in whatever car's doing better.
Oh, bless. Yeah. If you're not familiar with with IMSA in the past couple of years. You know, shout out to the McNeils. WeatherTech is the entitlement sponsor of, or main sponsor, whatever you want to call it, of IMSA. They do a good job in terms of branding and things like that. McNeil's been in the series for a while. His dad ran a few races.
Did he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he ran in like one or two seasons, enduros only. He was fine. But kind of the joke is they've jumped around in the GT classes and in machinery as well. But as of now, they're running a full GTD Pro season with a Mercedes. McNeil is stepping out of the car except for the Rolex this year. I think he's getting more involved with the family business. I can't speculate. I won't speculate. But he's only running the Rolex as of now, instead of what he used to do with the full season or enduros at one point before that. So they have one Mercedes. Actually, I think both of the other guys are Mercedes factory GT drivers. I mean, it should be a quick entry. McNeil was never necessarily slow, but yeah, it was always interesting to see what they rolled up in week to week. I think one season they had three different makes, so yeah.
Yeah, what was that? Porsche? What else? Did they Porsche, Mercedes, and what else did they run in that season?
I think they ran a Ferrari.
Wasn't it a BMW?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That makes sense. Ignore my BMW question comment. So, all great information. Love the Cooper McNeil question. I do have to give a shout out to our friends at our friends at Java House, which I neglected to do at the beginning of the episode, and I am debating on bringing some Java House down to the Rolex. Or shit, I'm gonna have to ship it down to the Rolex. I have to find out if that's allowed, because if it is, that will be keeping us awake for at least 20 of the 24 hours. What could be keeping me awake? Trenchy doesn't do coffee.
Well, I might for this
but
race.
If you're an indie, will you really?
Yeah, I'm probably gonna have to. Yeah, so I may have to do that because okay. I'm not an energy drink guy.
Yeah. I tried a Rockstar energy drink for the first time since I was like 21 yesterday. It's awful. It's disgusting. Truly disgusting. Truly, like, I wasted $3, and I'm very angry about that. Anyway, they have multiple locations in Indy. Go to their website. It's javahouse.com. Use promo code PITLANE10. Get 10% off your order. Buy all the coffee. It's awesome, delightful, and for the fourth time, I've rescheduled actually recording in one of their stores. I am doing it, I think, in 2 weeks.
Don't announce it. No. I was going to say don't announce it because it'll jinx it.
I'm sure I'm going to jinx it. I'll either be sick or, I mean, listen, y'all know what else has been going on in my life, but I don't need to go in there and I can't be in public. And then, you know, I've been back in Philly for a couple weeks kind of relaxing and, yeah, so let's keep moving on here. So we've talked about the cars
for
all
those
the changes.
Not aware, Mike is being labeled as a potential suspect for the DB Cooper airjacking. So
yes,
he's got to lay low.
Thank you for calling me old and a criminal in one sentence.
Well, it's definitely Dick Simon. Actually, that was DB Cooper, but yeah.
Yes, I hope it is. I really do hope it's him.
How else did he fund that?
We digress. We'll save that for another episode. I have one question, and then I'm going to put myself on mute because I'll probably end up coughing again the whole time. But the Roar before the 24, which is always the weekend before, I've never actually gotten to go. I won't be this year. But what is it, and why is it so important?
It's pretty sweet is what it is, to be honest with you. So it's, for lack of a better quick explanation, it's a mandatory test for all Rolex 24 entries. Less so this year, as in years past, is we do have a capacity grid. In fact, they had to have a waiting list, partially due to the GTP cars needing a little bit more room in the pit lane. So there's actually a cap on the grid as opposed to years past where you've had entry lists that are over 60 here and there. but 60 is kind of the hard cap now. But in the old days, a couple of years ago, if you were a maybe entry, you might show up. A lot of drivers with helmets in hands looking for rides. These days, things are a little bit more buttoned down going into the week. Used to be anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks before the race itself, but to cut down on travel costs and things like that, they've moved it to the week before. From what I've heard from a handful of crew guys, people seem to like that. Pretty sure Bozy's a fan of it. Could be putting words in his mouth, so sorry, Bozy, if you don't like the change-up. But, yeah, it prevents more travel going back and forth to the shop. The downside of that is if you do have a major incident, it gives you a little bit less time to recover from it. But you know, in theory, most of a week should do. But it the big thing it does every season is it sets the pre-race BOP tables. Everybody's favorite three-letter words. But you know, it kind of gives an understanding of who was maybe sandbagging in tests beforehand. In theory, and so has in every WEC 2, in theory, have software that will figure out if you're actually sandbagging or not. Questionable in practice, but you know, it's not as bad as it used to be, where you'd be there during the roar and, oh man, this let's say the Chevy DP back in the DP days is, man, they're really quick. And man, it's weird. They're just like lifting the entire front stretch just to get a time that isn't obviously as quick as maybe their competitors in hopes of lobbying for better BOP. So it sets the equivalency tables. It gives guys that haven't ran there a chance to run the course. It's pretty much mandatory, especially for guys that haven't run there at night, to run night sessions. And it makes it so it's not so crammed into just the race weekend itself with a long race. You know, Le Mans has their mandatory test sessions a week or two before their 24 hours. It's kind of a similar deal. So hopefully that's a verbose explanation of why the roar is important. But it's cheap to attend. It's really fun. And it's not as high stress unless you are talking to a team that just found themselves in the barriers. Then it can be high stress. But the drivers aren't necessarily as stressed out. The teams aren't. So if you're a fan, it's cheap to attend. It's, you know, IMSA's pretty well always open paddock. But, you know, let's say you're looking to talk to an owner, driver, mechanic, whatnot. You know, sometimes it's a little bit better to go to a test day like that than it is, say, you know, the morning of the 24 proper.
So related to the roar, do you know why? I mean, I guess I just haven't seen it publicly stated. We're no longer going to see that 100-minute qualifying race that we saw the last 2 years, that we're just going to go back to a, I guess, what you'd call a more traditional qualifying format for this year?
Because that was kind of dumb and nobody liked
Fair.
It.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just did. That wasn't said out loud, I guess, because they couldn't say it. But yeah, that sums it up.
That's kind of the vibe I've gotten from a number of folks. You know, credit where it's kind of due, I guess. IMSA wanted to change it up a little bit. I think they realized that it wasn't loved by the teams and didn't necessarily draw a TV audience, so they're going back to the traditional format. That could change in the future. You never know, but I for one, am happy they're going back to the traditional format, because I don't think it really added anything.
No, I don't either. I mean, it was kind of nice to watch some racing, you know, in advance, but I think it makes the actual event of the Daytona 24 less special if it's not the first time you see those cars racing each year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, it's not a one-to-one comparison.
Yeah.
But if, let's say this would be insane if it happened, but let's just say like the, you know, carb day final practice was actually like a timed race or something like that.
Yeah, that would be nuts. People would
go set
crazy.
The grid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Could you imagine the olds and their traditions argument that would be coming?
They will be setting themselves on fire on the yard of bricks.
Oh my God. Anyway, we'll save that for another week. Frenchie, I'll let you ask another one before I step in. We'll get like through one or two more things, and then we'll wrap it up. And then at some point before the Rolex, we'll do like a deep dive on the grid and weather and other fun Rolex 24 topics. I pray it's not going to be as cold this year.
I don't know. It's been cold in Florida, right, George?
I mean, it's been Florida cold. Well, we had an actual like
Florida cold is very different.
It's like in the 40s, right? Is Florida cold?
Yeah, something like that. We actually had like a cold week for the holidays, but yeah, this, who knows with Daytona being on the coast there, it can get kind of chilly and definitely gets foggy, but it's kind of a wild card in terms of weather.
All right, French, you got anything else you want me to wrap up with one more?
I'm just looking at some of these team names, and I'm intrigued to when we talk about like the grid itself, because there are some, and usually I'm pretty familiar with most of these drivers and teams, but there's a lot this year. It seems like this, I don't know, new format and most of the focus being on GTD and the new GTP class, that there's a lot of people coming over from Europe right now. These teams, I'm just really intrigued by this. I don't know a lot about any of these people, so I think other than that type of question, which we'll get into later, I don't have anything else for George.
George, are you still there?
Yeah, sorry about that. I had myself muted.
Continue.
Yeah,
no, I agree. I didn't ask him a question.
Oh.
You weren't listening to what I said.
Well, listen, after the episode, I will explain to George why I have not been focused for the last minute or two here. Like, this is not, it could not be public information, though.
Well, that makes it sound really weird.
Are the feds finally on?
That's the point. Yeah. Somebody just, yeah, continue. I'm going to shut up now.
Just quit robbing airlines, dude.
Mike is
DB Cooper.
Wait, we only have one Corvette now? Is that new?
Yes.
Didn't they run last year in the Daytona 24 that they had two at least? It wasn't like for full season, we only had one, right?
Sorry, go ahead.
We only had one for the full season, but didn't they run two in the Daytona 24 last year at least?
Yeah,
am I wrong?
Pretty sure they did run the two, but they had a split program between WEC and IMSA last year. They're doing that again this year.
Okay.
But the, as far as I understand it, part of the reason is the actual car they're running is technically not a GTD car.
Yeah.
It's a grandfathered in, slightly modified GTLM car, but they're working on an actual GT3 that will be eligible by GT3 standards to run anywhere in the world. So they've been focusing a lot of time on testing and making sure that is good to go, both in terms of a factory effort and if and when they get to customer efforts as well. But yeah, since that's not a, I guess you could call it a boutique car with the GTLM compared to the, off the factory floor in terms of racing anyways, GT3 entries. So not necessarily a lot of those chassis laying around. And I think the focus is more on next season than this season. They'll argue with you on that all day because it's Corvette racing and they want to win races and a championship. But, yeah, they're just running the one car this year.
All right, so I will wrap it up with one last question here. We'll try to keep this around a half hour or so. And I wrote it down, and now I can't find my notes. So, okay, yeah, here's my question. There's 60 cars this year. I think we talked about that at least once or twice already. I kind of assume that more cars equals more traffic equals, even though there might not be LMP3, there's going to be some kind of crazy inter-class battles at some point in the middle of the night or towards the end of the race, just because there are what, 15 more cars roughly than there were last year, maybe 13 more cars. I forget where the number ended up. So am I completely off base?
I don't think you are. We saw, I want to say 63 was the high number like a year, not last year, I guess, but maybe 2 years ago where you had a huge field. You're always going to see chaos between classes, especially as the early morning hours come. Guys get tired, guys get desperate. But I think you are going to see quite a bit of that this year. Last year, throughout the season, because both GTD Pro and GTD are both GT3 cars, essentially same cars, just different regulations in terms of what drivers you can have in, you know, two pro guys versus, you know, one pro guy and one am guy kind of a deal. You saw quite a bit of overlap in those two classes. This year, I think you're going to see some potential issues, especially at Daytona between P2 and GTD Pro, and likely at some other circuits that aren't as downforce intensive. Like Sebring, for example, is very downforce heavy. A lot of slow corners compared to kind of the fast flowing nature of the majority of Daytona, or a lot of time on those straightaways, because they've kind of backed P2 down a little bit to open up the gap to GTP. So there is a worry that's been, you know, vocalized by a number of folks on the interwebs that the overlap between the brake zones and the acceleration zones, between some of, let's say, the really good GTD drivers and maybe some of the AM-leaning P2 drivers might cause some chaos. You also have the potential for team efforts in GTP in the endurance races to run one car kind of balls to the wall, 10 tenths, and the other team car kind of holding back just in case the reliability isn't there. So I think you are going to see some overlap. The inter-traffic aspects of the GTPs aren't really well known compared to the DPI cars. And even with the really well-known aspects of DPI compared to the other classes, there were still incidents where guys would just turn in front of somebody or, you know, magically forget the GTD was there and already online in the middle of a corner. So I don't know if there'll be more chaos than normal, but there's definitely going to be chaos.
I'm here for it. All right. George, thank you for educating us. Listeners, thank you for listening to an IMSA episode. Obviously, as I said in my like little blog post today, we'll be doing a lot more of those this year and going forward, hopefully for many years. And I'll wrap it there. I don't think I'm missing anything else. So everybody have a fantastic 2023 first weekend.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.